So I just mentioned my car was blocked into a car park and I couldn't get out. It would have taken longer to leave the car there and walk. So we started speaking yesterday about blurios, and according to most Mefarshim, blurios means long hair, as in shoulder length hair, as in ponytail. And we said that there are at least four reasons. We mentioned three of them yesterday. Let's have a look. Well, one of them was chukos vayivdei kachovim. It was a non-Jewish hairstyle at the time. I think most of the representations of Oysa Huish at the time represent him with shoulder-length hair, although I don't think anybody's actually got a photo. But nevertheless, then it says the second possibility was
they do not have a photo
of him, but nevertheless they picture him as having long hair, which could have been a problem al chukos vayivdei kachovim. It could also be a problem mitam the chatzitz of tefillin, that the kesher at the back of the head is separated from the head by hair. But again, you'd have to know the halachas as to whether or not the hair is choytzeitz and how much hair is choytzeitz. It seems the suggestion is, obviously, by those poskim who say that it's like the machzis hashekel, and it's brought down by it's brought down by the machzis hashekel, and the Mishnah Berurah brings it down, that there seems to be a problem with excessive hair, let's say, rather than short hair at the back as a chatzitza for tefillin. Okay, then he says the final. Then he brings down Ra Alai Hamasa Ois Nemisha the Begadlim Blur Seim Milvachu Derech Shuch Shachatz VeGayvo, that it is people who care a lot about the way that they look and they want to have fancy hairstyles and that sort of thing. If that's what bothers them, it doesn't seem that it's very much approved, because all they're doing is they're trying to aggrandize themselves. And the final thing is, he brings down Divrei Rabbi Yehuda Chosid. Rabbi Yehuda Chosid, the Yeshboy Mishum Sakono. I don't know what it means, I don't know what he means, but he says if somebody grows long hair at the back, there is an inyan of Sakona. Again, we'll have the same debate as we had earlier on. Yeah, they'll catch themselves under a tree and they'll dangle like, who was that, Adon Yohu?
Avshalom.
Avshalom, right, correct. Yeah, so he says, Mishum Sakona. I don't know exactly what the Sakona is. And again, with as we've always had with the debates on Rabbi Yehuda Chosid, was it only for his family? Was it only for his descendants? Was it only for his generation? We're not sure about the Rabbi Yehuda Chosid. Some of them clearly were loyal and void. Some of them were clearly for his family only. So we can't be sure whether or not there's an inyan of Sakona nowadays. And it says there, Vezel Shoinoi, Tzivo Levonov, Shloi Legadla Blurios, he commanded his children not to grow long hair, kihu ovoin pelili, because it is a terrible sin. If there is an inyan in a sakona, then the question would be, so why would he only command his children? Why not tell everybody about it so that they can protect themselves from this sakona?
They were primitive people living in the villages. They had barbers, they had haircuts. They all lived in long hair.
Maybe.
Started the Torreway Northwest London. Tuesday, Yud Gimel Cheshvan, 4th of November. Rabbi Shlomi Wise, Shlita. Products containing grapes, part 1 of 2. This week's Torah has been sponsored by family Berkovitz, Luchwitz, Musamason of A.D. Berkovitz, Shatichi, and Yossi Fishman, Neriyoya. The chasla took place on Sunday. Yehi Rotzon Shem Lebayis, Demar Bishol Hashem Lisilo. And there's also Lina Nishmas, our founder, Reb Yosef Dober, and Reb Shimon Michal Tzvi Itzkovitz, Zichron of Rochel.
Morning. I don't know if I'm going to cover this mic. Nice paper. So if I may add, first of all, good morning everyone, and it's nice to be back. Thank you very much to the organisers, people who attend, and thank you to the sponsors, Family Berkowitz. I'd like to add, it's also my great-grandfather's yahrzeit today, and I'm named after him, so this should be Sholem ben Yichya Avram, so this should be Linishmas him as well, from my side at least. It's very humbling to come back and give another shir. I'm not sure how many times I've done this, but as every time I give a shir now, I feel more and more humbled by the fact that people seem to notice, and also the fact that I look on the sheet and there's people there who are Rosh Kolel or just in Kolel and Torosom Nosom, and I'm very much not Torosom Nosom. Unfortunately, I'm more in the working world. I spend most of my day doing administration of companies and different types of things which are not sitting and learning. So Kal Vachomer, I would like to say before I start this year that everything I say is just Haloch of Lola Maisa. Everyone should ask their own Rav, their own Posuk for the guidance. Okay, so the real push when Reb Josh asked me to give the shir, obviously was, I don't know if people saw, there was a tzettel that came out recently and about various fruit juices and a push for people to buy with a heksher. Now, I could just launch straight into that. However, I do feel that anyone can say a deya. I've told people many times, I've said it here, and one of my favorite Mishnahs is Pim Pikyo Ovis, Al Toi Mekab Ludati Shehem Rashayim V'la'ato. Don't say accept my opinion, because the other Dayonim, they are entitled and you're not. In other words, you don't just push your opinions on other people. I feel it's very important to have context and background, and with that you can then have a bit more of an informed idea of what we're talking about. There are two, I'm going to jump a bit to the end and say that there are two areas possibly where grape, or at least grape juice or wine, may have certain differences or colours than other isurim. So when you go through Tarovus, you go through various Isurim, there's many, some of them don't even come to mind. One of them is Orla, right? We don't always necessarily think of Orla. And there's some of them are not just Osaba be Achila or Shia. In other words, not just you're not allowed to consume it, you're not allowed to have Hana'ah, you're not allowed to have benefit from them. One of the ones that we do come across is Chometz on Pesach, right? People forget this. The last year I gave was on the Pesach theme. You forget that there's not just a problem of eating chometz on Pesach, you have to have benefit from chometz, which means monetary, whether it's interaction, transactions, etc. Talk about ordering your Tesco or other order on Chol HaMoed to come after Pesach, these sort of questions. And also just general things like creams, possibly. If you had chometz, there used to be the Madani Shmuel talks about beer shampoo. So could you, back in the day, before they had all these clever chemicals that people added. Anyway, so one of the questions is regarding grape juice and wine of non-Jews, it's actually, l'chayre, it would seem to be an issa hana. You don't have to have benefit from it. It's not just a question of drinking. That's at least from the time of the Gemara. But there are certain leniencies. One of them is the fact that, and we need to go into this, is that there may be differences in bittul with wine or grape juice to regular isurim. Regular isurim, most isurim, again, there are exceptions, but most isurim are bottled by shishim. That itself is a machlokas, but that's the way we paskin. And therefore, if you have a drop of milk, everyone knows, you have a drop of milk, it falls into your cholent. Or if, and again, terms and conditions apply, but if it gets mixed in, or even if you were to have something non-kosher, right? So unless it has other things like certain chashivus. So I'll give an example that comes up in kashrus is something called carmine or E120, which is a color made from beetles. And that would be something, normally you would apply bittul b'shishim, however that is something called chazusa, which is appearance, and therefore if you color your drink red, even if you add less than 1 in 60, which is about 1.6666 recurring percent, so it has a very strong impact on your product, and it's not bottle b'shishim. But generally, isurim are bottle b'shishim. It could be that grape juice or wine is bottled in, you don't need shishim, and it could be that it's bottle b'shish. That is a debate amongst the poskim. So, that's one area. Another area is an area of what's called chanan. So, anyone who's learned this v'heta, right, you hear the name chanan, I think, chaticha nasas nevela, which means that once you add a certain amount of issa to a mixture, do you look at the entire mixture now as osa? What happens? So I'm really skipping ahead. I prefer to really go into the background, but just to give an example, if you were to have a mixed fruit juice and it had non-kosher grape juice in it, and then you use that in your bakery. Okay, so it's a mixture. Let's say, for example, you've got 10% grape juice in this mixture. And then I use this mixture into a big dough. So do I say this mixture of juice is really fully osa? And I need, let's say, 60 times this entire juice, because the whole juice has now become osa. It's mixed in, and there's no bittel. And therefore, this entire juice now, when I put it in, I have to have 60 times the amount, let's say it's a cup. I need 60 cups of this juice in the dough. Or do I say, look, I look at the original percentage. The original percentage is 10%. And I don't say chaticha nasav, I don't say the whole thing now is osa. And therefore, I don't need 60 times this cup. I need 60 times a tenth of this cup. That is itself a shaila. And it could be that with grape juice, one could be makel. We'll get to that. Normally, certainly let's say with the bosak olav, if you were to have a piece of meat onto which milk fell, and it got absorbed into this meat, and then you put that piece of meat in your cholent, right? You mixed in. You need 60 against the entire piece of meat, not just the one or two drops of milk. The entire piece of meat, because chaticha nasis nevela, and we consider it as treif. The entire piece is treif, and then it goes into this your cholent. If you don't have 60 times the entire piece, your entire cholent is gone. It's a chumrah, and that's okay. That's a sugya for itself. Okay, so let's before we get to wine and grape juice, let's talk just a little bit. Some of the questions that come up. So let's say, for example, grapes. So whole grapes, right, or cut up grapes. So you may have a fruit salad, and we get this question from time to time, of a fruit salad, a fruit cocktail. Now sometimes these have grapes, and people ask, well, hang on, it's got cut grapes. So why is that not a problem? Because obviously the liquid within the grape will go into the mixture. So the Gemara and the Mishnayos in Masechta Avodah Zarah are clear that grapes themselves are not a problem. Okay, grapes are a fruit. The problem is grape juice or wine. And when does that become a problem? It becomes a problem once they've been pressed in a wine press, and the liquid flows, and it seems there has to be a separation of the juice from the rest of the grape, the peels and the pips, etc. And once that comes out, then it becomes a problem. There's actually more to it than that. We'll mention the Chochmas Adam has basically three conditions. It's more to do with when a goy is involved, etc. But that's what it is. So the Gemara, the Mishnah does talk about anovim mevukos, when it's been split, or it's been removed from the cluster, so the top now is open. But the Gemara, the Mishnah there is talking when yain nesech, or let's say even stam yainom, falls upon this, right? So the grape is touching or is being absorbing from non-kosher wine, and that would be the question. But if it doesn't touch non-kosher wine, then it's totally fine. I'll just mention very briefly the different opinions in the Rishonim, and this can have practical applications for how one produces grape juice or wine. There are two parts, broadly speaking, there are two parts to the wine press. There's what's called the gas, or gut, and the bow. So Rabbeinu Tam was of the opinion that when it's in the gas, the first part, the first pit where you tip your grapes into, at that point it cannot become osa. It's only when there's usually a bit like a mikveh, there's a pipe that will lead from that first pit to the second pit, which is the bur. And once it goes into the bur, then you've got a problem of stam yeinom or yain nesech, whatever. But as I say before, before that time, it's not. The other Rishonim, the Rosh and the Ran, disagree, and they say the hamshacha, meaning the taking out of the liquid from the grape, already takes place in the gust, and therefore it's already osa in the first pit, especially in those days, they used to have a sloping pit, so it sort of it wanted it to flow down, and that's their opinion. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodea Kuf Chof Gimel Seif Kot Seif Yud Zayin says, when does it when does wine become wine or grape juice? When does it become it's when does it get its status to become osa if the non-Jew touches it? Because the gas itself is of sloping. Okay, it's a very long piece. Okay, but Bekitso, he's passing like the Rosh and the Ram. However, and this is all, I think also the Shitto, this is also the opinion of the Rambam. Okay, so, but even then, there has to be the understanding that you're separating the two out. Therefore, if you have grapes, this isn't an issue. Let me give you an example of something that happened in a factory where they wanted to have an extract from a grape, and it was an interesting case where they were taking whole grapes, including the stalks, everything. They were putting it in, it was sending it down the line to be minced up, and then they were going to cook it with a vacuum. It's maybe those details are not so important, but they were going to distill out I think it was some phenols or some things from the grape. And the entire grape, the mass, the whole grape, and the twigs, everything else was going to be thrown away or sent to fertilizer or whatever it was going to be used. If it wasn't going to be used in the product at all. What came out of this grape was a clear liquid, and not tasting like wine at all or anything like that. And the halacha was that this, at no point had a hamshacha. It was entire whole grapes, which were minced and crushed, no one actually touched it, but leaving aside the questions of koyach and koyach kocha and all these things, you were cooking whole grapes. And therefore, if you're cooking pretty much, well, they weren't whole, but you're cooking them as whole grapes, as with everything, and there was never hamshacha, there was never separation between the grapes and the juice. There was never a pressing of juice out here, there was no such thing, and therefore this wasn't an issue. I'll come to this example of about cooking whole grapes or maybe cooking raisins and whether that is an issue. That does come up, people maybe not as aware, but in bakeries, people may know that they use quite a bit of raisins as a natural sweetener. And that's something to talk about. Okay, just before I go ahead and talk about raisins or grapes or anything like that, just as a side point, one of the questions we get about is raisins. Raisins, if you speak to a mashgiach who's even, as I say, bakeries or other similar type areas, they often know, they can tell you quite quickly good quality raisins or not. A lot of the raisins are predominantly that we get here are from either Turkey or California. That's the majority. There are others, but those are the two largest suppliers. And there can be problems with infestation. However, for the most part, you know, unless it's been stored badly or it's past its sell-by date, it's usually okay. I should add, so I just recently started noticing more raisins also coming from South Africa, so they're also quite a big supplier. But anyway, there's a question: what do you need to be choshesh for toloid with raisins? They're not easy to check, and you generally ruin them. So Rav Belsky and Rav Shachter in America, they said that as long as, you know, as I say, they're not old or badly stored raisins, based on a Taz in Pei Dalad Yud Sif Kotan Yud Base, he says that is, if you find even a small amount of infestation, it's still fine. Why? Because there's Svek Sveka. He says, first of all, we don't know when the infestation began. This is an interesting, unique point in Hilchos Toloim that you may be aware of, because we're checking flour. It depends where the infestation began. Did it begin on the ground or after they were detached from the ground? And at that point, there has to be the insect has to leave the fruit for it to become a problem. It has to be pirish. And therefore, and he says, since there isn't an easy way to check raisins without ruining them, you basically have to mince them, or you have to soak them, you can't use them anymore. So therefore, in that situation, one may rely on a svek sveka. We're not talking, obviously, when you open your packet and there's insects all over the place. So that obviously would be pretty obvious, and you can see them, and therefore they're perish, and you know, we're not talking about that. But we're talking in a case where you're concerned there may be a small amount of infestation. Raisins in general do not need bedika. Again, someone can ask their own rov. Maybe their own rov will be more machme, but that's their psak based on the taz. Okay. I'm already talking about products. Maybe we'll just go back a little bit in time and talk about the actual issur and the gezeira of stam yeinom. Sorry if it's not exactly in order, but it's worthwhile understanding it because there is a very big variance, there's a big spectrum of attitudes to stam yeinom bezman hazeh. It goes from all the way from its osa bahana to possibly being allowed for people who are cholim shein bo sakana. So the variance is very wide. The Gemara, the first siman, maybe the best simplest way to sum it up, is in the first siman in Hilchos Yayin Nesach, in Siman Kuf Chaf Gimel. So the Torah and the Beis Yosef talk about from the Rishonim, the early Rishonim and the Gemaras, what the Gezerah was. So there's two aspects to Stam Yeinom. One of them is, so we know separately there's an issue of wine that's been used for non-Jewish rituals, sacramental, religious purposes. That we know, that is Osa Min HaTorah, it's Osa B'Hanor. Right? So if you were to take genuine wine that's been used in genuine Avodah Zorah, that would be Osa B'Hanor. And there's no room for leniency at all. There is a question, and it's discussed by the Beis Yosef and others, is I forgot what it's called now. So it's transubstantiation. The Catholic or other rituals where they have the idea that they pour wine, they drink wine, and they say it's the blood of Yoshki, and it's actually they literally believe it's actually become his blood, and they drink, eat a wafer, and it's actually his body. And unfortunately, we can laugh at this, but this was the cause of many a pogrom or a riot where they said there was even a case of a woman who'd converted to Christianity, and she choked apparently once when being given some of the wafer, and she said, "Oh, is she spitting on the wafer?" And before long, she was dead. They mobbed, they lynched her, and finished. And this was a woman who had already been meshubad, and they took it very seriously, and. There were cases where they came in the day and they found holes in the wafer. They said, "Oh, the Jews broke in and they want to pierce him and they want to kill him again." And terrible, terrible things. Again, it sounds stupid to us, but I don't want to. I'm not interested in talking about other religions, but this was the cause of a lot of tsar, a lot of death over the years. So it's very unfortunate. But is this considered avodah zara to the point of nisuch? So Beis Yosef talks about this and says they're actually pouring wine in front of avodah zara. So it could be it's takrivus avodah zara. It doesn't quite have the din of nisuch of the Gemara of pouring wine in front of avodah zara. But that's one of the ideas. So the question is the stam yeinom, which the Gemara implies, Gemara and Shabbos, Gemara and avodah zara, is to do with b'nai seim, which means to do with intermarriage. Because wine was for many centuries, the main drink that everyone was drinking, certainly around the Mediterranean area and the Middle East, that was the drink. So that seems to be to do with intermarriage. The question is, what is the order? So very briefly, the way it's a machlokus actually seems to be between the Beis Yosef and the Prisha, how to understand the Rishonim. But in general, the understanding is most Rishonim see that the Gezerah was one Gezerah. There were not two separate Gezerahs. For the purposes of B'nai Seim, meaning intermarriage, all you need to do is say you're not allowed to drink wine. You don't have to ban it and say you can't have any benefit from it, right? They included a ban on having any benefit from it, even because to mimic, for what, and that's the discussion why, but to sort of pattern to copy the pattern of the existing, let's say, gezeira of Yayin Nesach. So if you've got Yayin Nesach, right, and you got Stam Yeinom, didn't want people to get confused, or whatever, there's different reasons, the Ran and Tosfos, what the reason is, but basically they made it all one big gezeira, and it's all Asabana. Even though, technically, from an intermarriage purpose, the Hana isn't the main point, it's the drinking. The Rashba learns differently. The Rashba learns, actually, that the Stam Yeinom came first, there was a gezeira of Bnei Seim. At that point, it was only Asa B'Shsia. So it was only, you weren't allowed to drink it. And only later, when they saw that there was a lot of use for rituals where they were, and they decided to make it Asa B'Hana. So it was a two-stage gezeira. So that's a good point. The Gemara already talks about vinegar, and the Ra'ah talks about, really, there's a bit of a struggle, there's different opinions in the Rishonim, what the gezeira was, how the gezeira was formulated, and what does it apply to. We may talk about that if we get, I almost finished the shir, and I've barely started. Okay, I mean, we talk about that if we talk about cooked one, yain mevushal. So how does that work? Why is, if you pasteurize, we'll get to the pasteurization, it's a different question. If you cook wine, the Gemara says if it was cooked before the non-Jew touched it, it's not a problem. Why should that be a heter? It's alcoholic wine, right? Forget about grape juice. Alcoholic wine, I'm mevashel it, still alcoholic, doesn't remove the alcohol, and it's still just as much of a social lubricant than non cooked wine. So that's the question. The Ra'ah talks about that, and we make a talk about that. I can't believe how little time I have. Okay, so just a few points before I even get to anything else. This is the takana. So one of the things that comes up and is practical, halacha lamaisa, and again, this is something that you could have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi to is one of the questions happens, of course, maybe we wouldn't buy. Now, hopefully we wouldn't buy a bottle of wine, even to give it as a present to a non-Jew, right? What is the halacha to Bizman HaZeh? So there's a long Tosfos in Avodah Zarah Daf Nun Zayin, on the base, where Tosfos has a very lengthy discussion about the Rashbam, grandson of Rashi, B'Shem Rashi, B'Shem the Goinim, where their opinion is, and there's a discussion with Rabbeinu Tam, whether Rabbeinu Tam agreed with this, Bichlal, that today we can be lenient because today we don't have the classic Avodah Zarah of once upon a time, and we don't have Nisuch, and therefore today Stam Yeinom, grape juice or wine, is only Osa B'Shsia, it's only Osa to drink, but it's not Osa B'Hana. That is something that's flatly disagreed with by all the Sfadi Rishonim. None of the Sfadi Rishonim took that, and the Shulchan Aruch says clearly it's Osa B'Hana even today. However, the Ramah brings down this opinion. And the Ramah says that if a non-Jew touches your wine, or you know, if there's any issues, he says even possibly even their wine that they produced, you're allowed to have hanor from. The main thrust of this was twofold. First of all, that you could get your money back. You know, for many years in the medieval period, Jews unfortunately were stuck being moneylenders, and you not wanted to get assets back. Now, this non-Jew may not have liquid cash. Could you take wine? You may have a lot of wine. Again, they drank a lot of wine. Could you be goyver your chov with the wine? And there's even a discussion whether you're allowed to sell wine as a business. So, unfortunately, again, Jews were limited in what they could do. And one of the things at certain periods of time was they could be an innkeeper. So, would you be allowed to stock non-kosher wine and sell it? And you're having hanor from it. And the Ramah says v'yesh mekilim b'zeh v'tov lahachme, and this is it's a pattern. This is a discussion about the Ramah's attitude to Stam Yeinom b'zman hazeh. And many of the Achareim are more machme, but the Ramah says yesh mekilim b'zeh. Okay, so and certainly in the Tshuvos of the Ramah, it seems to be more lenient. But this is a question. So can you have hanah? So I wouldn't suggest necessarily if you want to give your non-Jewish colleague or friend to buy non-kosher wine. It could be that there's room, according to Ramah, you could do that. It's an akroi. There's a separate issa of selling, making a business out of non-kosher food or non-kosher items. And this is actually a siman in itself, Kuf Yud Zayin, last Shalei Las Eschorim Adavar Issa. There is a base Hillel, which the Gilim Mashal brings in siman Pei Dalad, which is totally out of the place. And he talks about how, at least in what he saw, the minhag had become not only not to allow wine, not even to allow non-kosher cheese, which may even be an issur d'rabbanan, not to sell, even though Shulchan Aruch seems to say clearly that you can sell issurei d'rabbanan, you can sell things which are not allowed, prohibited in d'rabbanan, only issurei d'oraisa are not allowed, you're not allowed to sell. But the Beis Hillel implies that the minhag had become to even ban issurei d'rabbanan. Again, when that comes up, one would have to know, does one paskin like the Beis Hillel l'chumrah? But if one gets a present, for example, and this has happened, people get a case of champagne or something, and what do you do with it now? So if technically, and again, I'm not paskening, but if you were a Sephardi, you have an issue now. You have to pretty much throw it away, pour it down the drain, whatever. It's a hana, even nowadays. Whereas according to the Ramah, you've been handed this thing. You're not allowed to drink it, but you're allowed to have hana, and therefore you could sell it on. Or give it away, re-gift it, which is also getting hana from it. That would be a practical example. There is also a halacha, and again, I don't know. This is unfortunately in the wider Jewish community, people are not very aware of the issurim of wine and grape juice, etc. And I've seen even things like mustard. You sometimes get Dijon mustard and things like that, which have balsamic vinegar and other things which are awesome. People are very much in the wider community are not so aware of these things. But there's even a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Kuf Yud Dalad, if I can find it, where they talk about if you're in a place where people are not nizhar from this. Mokum is Kuf Yud Dalad Sif Beis. Mokum Shei Yisrael. Mokum Shei Yisrael. Noyagim Kula B'Yayin Shel Goyim. Af Hasheicha Osim. So if people are noyag, lenient about having non-kosher wine, so there you're not even allowed to have the beer. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. You shouldn't even drink beer with them or anything like that. It's based on a Gemara, a story in the Gemara of Shmuel Bar Bisna, who came to a place where called Marguan. And that's the story there, and he noticed that people were drinking wine. If Rashi understands the Gemara. So the Taz, the Marshal already says that this is talking about in a place where people are lenient. But if people are completely oblivious to the whole thing, and they don't even know the Chalal, that there is an Issa at all, they know Heta Gomor, then you don't have to be Machmeh about the beer, because it's the point of being machmir about the beer is so that it's sort of to show a seriousness about it, trying to get them, you know, they shouldn't think, oh, what's the difference between beer and wine? It's all alcohol, and so if you don't have anything, okay. But if these people bichlal don't just drink everything and they don't understand there's even a gazera, there's anything to talk about, then one could have beer there, etc. This, as I say, is a problem that's always been since. We all were taught as children that Rashi was a vintner and he had grapes and wine. And this is true of many of the Rishonim in Ashkenaz. However, when they moved out of France and Provence and they moved across, there was for a time a big problem. And they developed a custom to be makel about these things. The Maharal, in a lot of his Sforim, Shrayas Chai V'Kayim, he really, and it's probably the easiest place to find it, is... in Gvuras Hashem on Pesach, but there's, I think, in Beragola, and in many of his Sforim, he talks about this terrible thing that Jews were making about Stam Yeinom. And Rabbi Yaakov Emdim, in his autobiography, Megillah Sefer, talks about his father, Chacham Tzvi, that one of the things he did, this is near the beginning of the book, he says that he was a Rav in Altona for 20 years, he had a close there, and one of the things he did was he arranged that there should be wine. And he sent, Shluchim to Italia and Tsarfas, Italy and France, to make kosher wine. And this was a great to people, because they weren't having kosher wine. And he managed to fix a remedy of a very terrible situation. Particularly in Italy, there are, if we give a second part to the shir, there are many tshuvas that came up. What would be the right thing to do if you have no kosher wine? Should you make Kiddush and Havdalah with Stam Yeinom? Which we wouldn't, again, we wouldn't think in those terms, but there are truvas about that. What should you do? What's preferable? And various other things. Okay, so Mitzvah Shem, as I say, as a part two, we'll talk a little bit more about the productions and maybe talk about cooked or pasteurized wine and other such things, and maybe we'll get to fruit juices and grape juice.
Did you mention anything about, I didn't know what to catch, you said, but did you mention about like fruit tins with grape juice, and you've got the cocktail.
Yes, I should probably, that's a very good point, I should probably mention that next time, because there's a difference between grapes as a piece of grape in a cocktail, and when the juice has juice.
It says flourish on the thing.
Yeah, sometimes there's some where it can be pear, let's say, or grape. In other words, it depends on the season, it depends what they have, whether it's kosher, in which case you can't take a risk. Right. Yes, thank you. I'm going to try and remember that next time.
I'm old enough to remember when London-based Tim Functions you had non-kosher wine at
London.
Didn't
cover,
years
it's
ago.
Not just London, I will tell you, sorry to say, it's Kadastia Functions as well. That was just unfortunately a thing.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They say we don't take, that even to this day, they don't take, I don't know if it's recently, it's 10 years that, that's what we said, we don't take responsibility for the bar. The liquors, nothing.
Remember, I'm Jonathan Levy's dad.
Yes.
And it's quite very much.
What's your first name? Right, Jonathan?
David.
Yes. Okay.
A friend of mine who dealt in job lots and was offered a load of wine. Wine, and he didn't know what to do. He went to Ruchon Alpen to ask Charlotte. Ruchon says, Mishlamti, where do your family come from? So he said, Hungary. You can deal with this. So the guy was amazed. I mean, he explains it. He says in Poland, where wine wasn't traded at all, nobody had wine, you couldn't afford wine. In Hungary, which was a huge trade, to deal.
So there's lots of chuvas in Dr. Chuva about, and he's Hungarian, pretty much, and he talks about this.
He was a Paschal chicken. Yes.